everyone, and welcome back to the Time Shifters podcast. I'm Christopher, and here with Matt.
I've enjoyed my extra hour of sleep.
Yes. Yeah, we're recording right after the end of daylight savings. So I don't know about you. I hate daylight. I hate the whole fall back, spring forward. Just stop. I hate it.
I mean, I like being in it because I like how the day lasts longer. The daylight keeps going. I would just say, don't revert back. Let's just lose an hour for the rest of our lives and just suck it up.
I think we just maybe just do a half an hour, then stop.
Then stop.
You'll split the difference. Just do it.
That could work.
Well, thanks everyone for joining us. Hope you enjoyed your extra hour of sleep or extra hour of movie watching or whatever it is that you did with your extra hour. I actually did a little sleep myself. I thought I'd stay up a little later, but no, I went to bed. By our clock, I went to bed at a reasonable hour.
And woke up extra rested.
Yeah,
yes.
Exactly. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. Just to make sure everyone knows and remind everybody that you can subscribe to the podcast. Go to Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Google Play, and we are now on Spotify. And you can follow us over on Facebook. We have a Facebook group. And I also started a Facebook page, although if you follow that, all you're really going to see is when the episodes post, which is kind of important. But if you want to chime in any discussions and everything, that's what the group's for. Just search for Time Shifters Podcast. You'll find us on either one of those. And you can follow us on Twitter. We're at Time Shifters Pod, and you can follow Matt at Movies at the Matt. But Matt's got a couple extra places, at least one extra place where you can follow him now. The podcast bug has bit. Matt, let's take it away. Tell us about your new endeavor.
Yeah, well, so, you know, it's a show that I bring up all the time on here. I'm a massive, huge fan of the CW show Supernatural. And for years I've been saying I've been wanting to do a podcast about anything, but that show kind of has been at like one of the, you know, top three ideas that I've had. And so I finally did it. I finally went and made one. I have to thank you though, because I don't think I would have done it had I not been on here, had I've not learned things from you, had I've not like kind of picked your brain. So definitely thank you for that.
Absolutely, no problem.
And so I started it with a friend of mine. We've watched a bunch of the show together, like kind of like as marathons. And then the concept of the show is, okay, you're going to have at least one person who's a huge geek out fan of the show and is going to rewatch it with someone who's never seen it before. So she convinced her sister to join us. So it's the three of us. So we're starting Supernatural right from the beginning. Her sister's never seen it before. She's going through 2005 television. It's kind of like a time capsule.
It is.
You know, you're looking at it, you're like, well, it wasn't that long ago. But like TV's gone through a lot of changes in the last 14 years because Supernatural is on its 14th season. It's not done yet. It might keep going. It might end this year. It's going to hit its 300th episode. She's got a lot of TV to catch up on. We have a lot of episodes to do. But it's called Season 14, Time for a Podcast, which does make sense for the show when you get to Season 7. And it's just our way. It's just our way of kind of acknowledging when we started it, because if Supernatural keeps going and if anybody starts listening down the line and they want to go, well, when did you start this? It's in the title, dummy. We started it in season 14.
So here we are talking season 25.
Exactly.
The next generation.
Yes. It could. Who knows? This show just keeps going, and I love it for that. It probably should have stopped around its fifth season, but whatever, it's still going. We're going to keep doing it. And it's been a lot of fun. It's a different show than this one. Not better, not worse, just different. Probably because we're focusing on one narrative that keeps going. And yeah, we're having a lot of fun so far. We just dropped our fourth episode, third episode discussion. And today we started a giveaway contest. So you can find us on Twitter at Season 14 Podcast. You can find us on Tumblr at Season 14 Podcast. And yeah, you'll find the information there. And we're probably going to put together like a quick little promo clip of what our podcast is. So if anybody out there has a podcast and wants to swap promo clips.
I know somebody.
Yeah, I know somebody too. So yeah, if anybody wants to do that, you can get in touch with me on Twitter, or if you want to get in touch with me through the Time Shifters Facebook group, let me know. We can swap clips. We'll play yours right at the start of the episode. Yeah, like 30 seconds or less, we can work with that. So yeah, we're out there. Please give us a listen. Give us a like. We're being really goofy about it.
Yeah, no, I've tuned in. I've listened to the first three episodes that have aired. It is fun. You guys obviously have a really good time. I enjoy listening to you guys. And I enjoy listening to you, and I guess, is it PJ is the?
PG.
PG.
PG is, and Jess. They're wonderful.
And Jess is the one that hasn't.
He's never seen
right,
it.
So it's PG and you. And you guys, you can almost feel you guys try not to spoil things.
It's really hard. It's so, so hard. Because
Jess will say something, and you can hear you guys kind of like,
yeah. Mm-hmm. No, we'll look at each other. We'll just be like, oh, no. Which is funny, because she'll say something, and we'll be like, that's funny, because that will come up in 5 more years
right.
for the show. But yeah, because there are different discussions we could have. We could be like, oh, yeah, because that will come back up in season such and such or things like that. But we try to let it go. Sometimes we can't help ourselves. But yeah, it's been a big, goofy mess.
Yeah, I enjoy Jess and PG as they kind of – they apparently tweet back or IM message themselves back and forth while they're watching the show. Repeat and read off some of the messages and conversations that go back and forth during the episodes, and that's kind of fun because it's almost like a stepping into a commentary.
Yeah. Well, we take that even further. We just recorded last week where the three of us sat down and watched an episode together.
Nice.
And recorded ourselves doing that. So we're still going to have our discussion, but then we're going to kind of splice in our reactions because we decided to do it since it's considered by many the worst episode in the show's 14-year history. So, and neither of them had seen it because PG hadn't watched all of the first season. So I was like, something this bad, we need to see it as a group. We need to react to it as a group. And we had a really good time doing that.
Excellent. Good. So is that the one that just dropped?
No, because we're kind of like doing up, like a backlog. So that just dropped is Supernatural's third episode. The one we recorded live is the 8th episode. So we're kind of ahead of ourselves.
A little ways to go. Yeah. So actually, by the time you hear this, it'll actually still be coming.
Yeah, won't even have come out yet.
You guys drop once a week, yes?
For right now, it's every other week, just like we're doing here. When I'm done with grad school, we'll probably switch to the one-week format.
Excellent. Good. Yeah, so by the time you guys hear this, you will not have missed the live episode of season 14.
Yeah.
So that's very cool. I'm glad to, you know, I helped inspire you a little bit. Podcast is definitely a disease, but it's fun to spread because you end up kind of getting involved with a lot of different people. And I got to think there's got to be dozens of Supernatural podcasts, but there's never there is always room for more of whatever, especially something that niche and that episode that popular of a show. There's always room, and you'll find yourselves kind of becoming part of this really great community of A, Supernatural podcasters, and B, just podcasters in general. So yeah, a lot of fun. So enjoy.
I will. Yeah.
It can be a hole that you can climb down really quick, but it's fun. Well, I tell you what, that's really kind of most of the big news. I don't know much else that is coming up. Just recently, just today, Mike Myers, the actor, is apparently threatening us with a fourth Austin Powers.
Yeah, threatening. Very accurate.
Yeah, not looking forward to that at all.
No.
I really did not like the third one. It is a series of diminishing returns. It was that first movie I really loved. The second movie was like, oh, that was cute. The third movie, I just, no thanks. No, I don't imagine him coming back with, you know, regaining the magic that was that first one.
He wants to know, like, how Adam Sandler's still churning out movies, even though nobody seems to like or watch those.
Yeah.
He wants to get in on that. He wants that Netflix money.
Yeah, maybe that's it. Maybe that's where it'll end up. Maybe it'll show up on just some streaming service. I can't imagine any studio will go, yeah, we'll put you in the big screen in the theaters.
Have to get a lot of different investors or just pay for it himself.
So look for the next Hulu original on Powers 4. Yeah. But do we have any other news besides that?
Not so much news, just kind of a fun thing to share. It was a couple weeks ago, I went to MST3K Live.
Oh,
that,
fun.
That came to town here.
Was that the one that had the new guys? Did it have some of the old guys, too?
It had Joel. Yeah. Joel was there, and it had Jonah, and then it had the bots.
Right.
And they watched, it was this 1980s sci-fi called The Brain,
mm-hmm.
and that was a bad movie, yeah, perfect for MST3K.
Wow. Okay. I don't think I've seen that one.
It's this movie where this local TV studio is doing like these like empowerment hour-long episode things, but really what it's, there's this giant brain that has teeth that will eat you that's broadcasting into the people's TVs to turn them into mindless zombies. You know, it's this very unsubtle message that's what TV will do to you. But for whatever reason, this like class clown guy at his high school is the one person who can't be taken over by these messages, so he's the one person who can save the town, and the way they go about it is just makes no sense,
right?
But perfect for an MST3K.
Yeah,
but
sounds like it.
What was great was they set up the stage. You see the bots, you see the two guys, they're in the test subject jumpsuits, they're mm-hmm. in character the whole time. The woman who now does she's the new She takes on the role of Pearl Forrester's clone, and she's the new voice of Gypsy, so she was there as kind of the host.
Mm-hmm.
But they also set up a screen on the stage where they go sit behind it, so you see their silhouettes.
Nice.
You see the chairs, you see the silhouettes, and they're actually there doing the pointing and making the
very
commentary.
Cool.
So you're in a theater, as they're in the theater with their silhouettes up front, and it was great.
No, that's a lot of fun. And I've not seen an MST Live. I've gone to a Riff Trax Live.
Yeah, Riff Trax Live is fun, but that's just them standing on
right,
the stage
just
talking.
Off to the side, right?
This, they, you know, they rebuilt like to make it look like you're inside the Satellite of Love on the stage, mm-hmm. and, you know, we got movie signs, and everything starts flashing, and, you know, they take breaks to come back and just to kind of have like mini games and
right.
everything. And there's this really funny part because the new show on Netflix has Felicia Day as the Patton Oswalt mm-hmm. as the new Mads, and they're supposed to get like this message from her, and nothing, like you see like where they're supposed to be, and all of a sudden static plays and it says like, you know, oh, there's a problem, and then Crow goes, you couldn't get Patton or Felicia, could you? They're not here.
they couldn't pay them.
So, it's really funny, really cute. I mean, I was in hysterics the whole night. It was absolutely
good.
Hilarious. There was one point where I thought I was going to pass out. I was not, like, my stomach hurt. I needed to catch my breath, and
oh,
I couldn't.
Fantastic.
So,
well,
yeah, it was hilarious.
Gives me a little bit more hope for the next season, maybe, of MST.
Yeah.
Have they kind of calmed down in the writing a little bit, in the riffing? Because that was my problem with that season of when it came back, was it was just every joke, rapid fire, one after the other, and it like nothing had time to breathe. You didn't know if it was funny or not because you were listening to the next joke.
For the live one, they did. They'd do a joke, and they'd give you a moment, then they'd do a joke. There are times where they would go fast, but you could tell where like the going fast was the joke, like just rapid fire saying things.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, okay, how are they doing that so fast? And they're live.
Right.
And they're holding a puppet.
Mm-hmm. All right, interesting.
So, yeah, if it ever comes back, I definitely recommend, or because it's still on tour, so if it's in your area, go check it out. It's absolutely hilarious.
Yeah, fantastic. Fun. All right, well, then I guess that'll do it. We'll take a little break here. When we come back, we're going to talk about, and I already forgot the year, 1984, was it?
Yes.
1984's Runaway.
Hi, I'm Mike White.
And I'm Rob St. Mary.
And we're the hosts of the Projection Booth podcast.
If you haven't heard of the Projection Booth, that's okay.
But we think it's time that you have.
We've been doing this for over 3 years now.
And we think we're doing a pretty good show.
Every week we look at a different film and put it in context.
We try to bring you interviews with the people behind the films.
Or experts on a subject matter covered in the film.
We don't specialize in any one particular genre or type of film.
We try to examine every aspect of cinema.
From every corner of the globe.
Even at 3 years, we barely just scratched the surface.
But we're ready. We're ready for you to listen to us.
That's right. Now's the time to give us a shot.
download us through our free smartphone app.
Or through Stitcher, iTunes, Geek Juice Radio, Jackalope.
Or our website.
Projection-booth.com.
We'll keep making great shows.
Now it's your turn to listen to them.
All right, Runaway, 1984, starring Tom Selleck, taking a break from his hit show Magnum P.I. to do a little filming. So he's at the height of his career, you know, or height of his fame with Magnum P.I., but he wants to kind of break out when he has a chance. He said he wanted to do some films, and if the timing worked out, you know, so they said, yeah, you're on break from Magnum, come and do this film. So, all right. It also stars Cynthia Rhodes, who I think was kind of a little bit of an up-and-coming actress at the time.
Yep.
Unfortunately, her acting career, anyway, sort of petered shortly after. I don't think she did a whole lot out of the mid-80s.
Yeah.
She was also a singer and a dancer as well. So
right.
That, I think, is what kind of took over more of her life.
Yeah, so she had a lot of, like, singing and dancing roles, and she was kind of getting, like, forced into that, like, that typecast, and this was the first role she got that wasn't that, and then she was trying to just get more roles. But then what I read was she retired willingly because to raise her family.
Okay.
She had three sons, and she decided to raise them.
Absolutely. Okay. And then one of the early appearance of Kirstie Alley, who would go on to...
Pre-Cheers, I believe.
It was Pre-Cheers. It was, I think, was maybe the film after, or the second film after she made her debut in Star Trek II, Wrath of Khan. And so, early appearance of her here. But then the probably maybe an interesting name, and a big name as well, is our antagonist here, is Gene Simmons of Kiss fame.
Yeah.
And I think this is into his part in this, I think, is interesting, or him being trying to be an actor is interesting, because I think prior to this, his only role was Kiss Meets the Phantom of the Park, which no one in the band actually in the end liked the film at all.
Right.
But I think over time, they've all admitted that they had fun doing it. So I think it was just a little bit of the acting bug bit Mr. Simmons.
He's got the look.
He does.
He looks terrifying.
And apparently he was offered a lot of roles that he turned down because they are all, I think Dr. Detroit was one. I forget the other role he was offered, even a role for a TV show, but they're all sort of like music orientated or musicals. And he's just like, I don't want to do that.
Right.
So this came apart. He's like, oh, we want you to be the brooding bad guy. And he's like, I can do that.
I can look terrifying.
The film was written and directed by Michael Crichton.
You heard that right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this is a rewatch for us both.
Yeah, I haven't even talked about how we kind of came to this. We mentioned it a little bit in our last episode.
Right. I guess because you happened to rewatch it a couple months ago and you posted about it, and that's made me go, I forgot about that movie that I saw a lot as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I wanted to rewatch this because I probably haven't seen it in over 15 years.
Nice.
And there are some scenes that are just stuck in my mind that I'll always remember. And then there's other parts where I'm like, wow, I'm seeing that different as an adult.
Mm-hmm. Seeing the film from your childhood or your young adulthood or whatever is always interesting in that regard, especially coming something out of the 80s, because films in the 80s are such a different beast than what films today. You know, forget just effects or whatever, just so many of the story elements or just even how they have to do it because it's just the way it was.
Right.
That's
how the 80s looked.
Yeah. I watch some films now or TV shows that came out of the 80s, and I'm thinking, well, why don't they just call somebody? Oh, they don't have cell phones.
There's that one part where you do see the cop on the big, giant mobile phone.
Right.
That has like 8 minutes of battery.
it can be an interesting experience watching films from this era. I think I enjoy watching films from this era most. Just because I remember them best, because that's kind of when I was growing up and started to watch movies. And it's just the most fun seeing the difference between 80s films and, 21st century films.
Even just 90s films.
Sure.
Once you get to 95, like, there is a big difference.
Big sea change in film. Yeah. But Runaway here is a film set in the future. No idea how far into the future. Michael Crichton purposely never said what year. He didn't. It was just, it's in the future.
Mm-hmm.
It's in a future where robots have become staples in the home. They help us with the dishes. They do our cleaning. They work in construction now. It's just they're just a matter of fact.
Yeah, they just do all of like the little menial tasks that we don't want to do.
Right, and that in a way is a little bit. I mean, even in the 80s, we still had this weird vision that in the future that's the way things were going to be.
Right,
definitely in the starting in like in the 50s or whatever, we thought we'd actually have like C-3PO cooking our dinner or something in the future or whatever. Now, by the 80s, I think we'd finally come to realize that's not going to happen. But you could have the little boxes with the one arm that could help carry papers or boxes or help with deliveries. And that actually, some of that actually has come to pass. Bit large corporations and stuff use robots to go through the halls delivering whatever it is from one department to another.
Yeah, I've seen those things where, like, they're in hotels where, like, you order room service and the robot brings it to you. I'm like, I want one!
Yeah, no kidding. Obviously, by the 80s, we've seen some robotics in manufacturing, automotive manufacturing and that sort of thing. And that's only grown, exponentially over the years. But in this film, they actually depict them, like, building buildings by themselves.
Spewing sparks.
I thought that was interesting that there was an entire – they had an entire site that was strictly – robot controlled. No humans were building
24/7.
Yeah. Which I thought was very interesting. And you think about it, well, it would, if you could do it, why wouldn't you? That makes sense. 24/7. You could have that building done in, 6 months instead of a year and a half or whatever it would take. That would be pretty,
No labor strikes.
Right. That does have, takes those leaps into that all these robots that help out have a sort of AI that has yet to really come about. So that is the one kind of, you can't hold conversations with your robots.
Not even today. He does with that like home nanny robot.
Yeah, that's what I mean. In the film, they have where they have sort of an AI and where you could actually hold conversations. Okay. And that's not something that has yet to happen.
For us.
For us.
Well,
yeah.
You kind of can. There are some AIs you can have conversations with. You just kind of have to teach it some basic conversations first, but then it can learn. I actually worked with one once. It was interesting.
Interesting. Oh, okay.
Yes. It was one that was being designed to help. The AI was designed to be a parent, and the purpose was to help doctors have the hard conversation with parents about, like, there's nothing more we can do.
Oh, right.
And seeing the AI respond to those, I was like, holy crap.
That's how you build. That's how trouble happens, I think.
Well, it was kind of cool because I was helping this guy develop it, but he was looking for like real input because he knew how to work on the AI, but he never worked with like patients and families and doctors before.
Right.
So he came to me and I brought it to members of my team and we were like giving him things to like tell it, to teach it. And one of the things was he was like, cool. And he showed us this thing where like he just started asking it weird questions or making statements that had nothing to do with the subject matter. And after three times of that, the AI goes, get out of my room.
Wow.
And it's like, oh, there's a threshold where you've upset the parent. I'm like, that does make sense. That would happen.
Oh, interesting.
So
wow.
You can do it.
Yeah. All right. Well, it has not become a...
It's not everywhere.
It's not everywhere.
Yeah.
Well, in this near future, because robots are so ingrained in our life and everything, occasionally they might go bad or whatever, so there's an actual section of police force that take care of runaways. The robot just goes off program and it's endangering itself or others. You can call this unit of the police and they will come and wrangle this thing and bring it under control. Tom Selleck plays one of these cops. He gets a new partner who is the Cynthia Rhodes. And during one of their investigations, a robot not only goes rogue, but actually takes like a gun and is holding a baby hostage in a home. And they discover, after they finally subdue this thing, they discover that there's a chip has been added to the motherboard. No one knows where this chip has come from, but this chip has obviously been planted, and this chip is what's responsible for this runaway. So now there is someone out there making these robots go rogue.
Yeah.
And threatening people's lives. And now, you know, and the game is afoot. So being that this is the first time you've watched this film.
In a long time.
Did you remember, how much of the plot did you remember?
I remembered the whole plot. I remember what was going on and like who played what role and where it was going to go. The things I didn't remember were like the forced love story that wasn't even a love story. It was just sort of like, they're a couple now.
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah. That's the 80s abridged love story thing. Yeah. Pretty typical of films of the time. Well, unfortunately, I think we still see that a little bit today.
Yeah. It was just so odd. And the other thing is that I couldn't remember that watching, I was like, does this whole thing take place over 2 days? Which I think it does.
It's pretty
not,
quick.
Yeah. It's not like a couple of weeks or anything. It's like the new partner shows up. They have their first day together. Then it's the next day. And then they finish. But then he's called back to the police station. And then he doesn't go home for the rest of the night. And then he finishes up everything. And the movie's over. And it's still night. Mm-hmm. And I was... The funny part was... rewatched this last night, had my wife watch it with me. She had never seen it before. And when the movie ends, she just started laughing. She's like, so that happened in a weekend.
Yeah. Yep. Just that's the life of the runaway squad.
Right. It's just this real quick moment.
It was almost, and watching this film, and it really felt like a 80s cop drama.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, the way it was filmed, the way it was acted, didn't hurt that it had... or help that it was Tom Selleck, who you kind of associate with television more than movies. So yeah, it felt like this is like the premiere of, you know, the TV series Runaway.
Which I would watch. I think I'd be more into that. I think this would have been better as a TV series than as, you know, an hour and 40 minute movie that just, it felt rushed. There are parts where I was like, you need to, because they kept trying to build up like this idea of a rivalry between Tom Selleck's character and Gene Simmons' character, and for me it never got there. Like, I would have, like, if he was like a season-long villain and then there's this final confrontation.
Yeah, there was they played it off like there was like this nemesis, sort of my arch nemesis, the evil,
has know, shown up
has
now
shown, yeah, and yeah, you can't do that in a day.
Right. He's just another bad guy that gets taken down.
Right. A few of the things that I always remembered from this film was the bullet that can track you.
Yes.
And the robot spiders.
Yes.
I forgot that they spewed acid.
Oh, I remember that. I remember the injection part, because I remember as a kid, like, that was the part that creeped me out. It wasn't just that they were spiders, that they jumped, it was the explosions. It was that thin, thin needle that, like, goes into everybody's neck. That part's just the
somehow. See, maybe that's it. Maybe that bothered me so much I blanked it out.
Right, that's the real creepy part. Like, because when they crawl along, I'm like, "Hey, it's a Kinex. It's my erector set." Oh crap, that needle.
Yeah, it's what it looks like. Yeah, it is fun that, you know, the robots are certainly, you know, technologically what you would expect from a near future in the 80s. They weren't, you know, outrageous. Everything was obviously, you know, practical effects. So although these robots were probably, you know, remote control and not, you know, but they still worked, and it was very simple designs. I liked that. The grandiose things were like the tracking bullet that it could steer itself based on heat signatures. I thought was pretty clever. That has, I hope, as far as we know, that technology does not exist.
It exists as like a giant missile, right. But not as like a 2-inch bullet.
Right.
But that was a cool, like, other than like seeing the bullet fly through the air, which was just like this little black notch that I think they just animated in, the scene where you're seeing things from the bullet's point of view is still kind of a cool effect
it
of
is.
Like that, like, fisheye lens kind of look. It's clearly just a cameraman is running through an alley chasing Tom Selleck, which is fine, but it's kind of cool that it's just sort of like, oh, you're at the point of view of death and it's going to gain on him.
So what did you think of the film? Did it hold up? Is a film that you enjoyed when you were younger? Did it hold up? Did you still enjoy it?
I still enjoyed it, but it's funny because I just saw the live show. I turned to my wife and I was like, man, this movie needs an MST3K. Like, it's begging for it. There's just parts of it that are just so easy to just playfully mock and just point out how ridiculous it is. But it's, I think it holds up for like what you said of like the practical effects always help. Mm-hmm. There's no, and that the robots are very, they took kind of like a realistic view of it. Like they didn't try to make like a big human robot and right. give it a face and give it hair, or they didn't do like, oh, well, here's an actor who's a robot.
Right.
It's a box on wheels and right. it will talk to you. Like, yeah, that's fine. That's totally down to earth. And, you know, then you get the spiders and you're like, okay, well, that's creepy. But it's just, you know, you see the parts almost. Like, mm-hmm. it's not even finished. It's not some cheap CG spider or they didn't just, like, release, like, a real tarantula and be like, that's the robot spider. Right. It's this metal, clunky-looking thing that you totally believe is mm-hmm. scary.
Yeah.
And I like that. That's the parts that hold up. The parts that just didn't hold up of it's just sort of the bad writing. There are just a lot of bad writing moments. Like, there's the part where he's known his new partner for a day. She got shot by one of the exploding bullets, but it didn't explode. And then he's picking her up from the hospital, and he's saying, like, we should go to dinner. And she seems really into that idea. And he's like, well, I take all of my new partners to dinner. Like, we can go over work things. And she gets upset, and I'm mm-hmm. like, why does she want to date him? Right. She just met him, and they work together.
And he got her shot in the first day.
Right. It doesn't make sense to me that she's upset that he doesn't want to go on a date. Mm-hmm. It's just like, okay, I get it, Michael. You really want like there to be a romance here. But, dude, you don't know what you're doing when you're writing a romance. Just stick to the sci-fi action.
Yeah, they could have dropped that altogether. It didn't need to be there.
At all.
That does hurt the film. I mean, and I think it was just a matter of, well, you have to have that.
Right.
At the time, it was just, you have to have the romance. Oh, okay.
But it doesn't even make sense. They don't even build up the romance. If it was something like, oh, they've been partners for 10 years and this was a long time coming, not someone who just walked through the door yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And there is no date. There is no like sexual tension. There's no nothing. But the movie ends with them making out.
Right.
Why?
Yeah. And Tom Selleck never, ever plays it like he's really attracted to her other
right.
than he always plays it like you're my work partner.
Right. Yeah, this is totally together. Professional.
Exactly.
And then by the end of it, he's like, hey, I am into her. Why? That never came up.
Yeah, those are one of those things. That's kind of like those are the questions you want to ask. Like you want to ask Crichton. You know, it was like,
was this your call?
Was that your call? Did the studio force you into that? You know, that's where you want to talk to the filmmakers to find out where'd that come from. Yeah. Why did you do it?
Yeah, those parts kind of hurt the film today. I could maybe see audiences being like, "No, kiss him! It's Tom Selleck!"
Right. Gene Simmons is the villain.
Both a really good and a really bad villain. Like, when he has to open his mouth, that's where the problems start.
He is so good when he's just in the back, just looking menacing.
Mm-hmm.
He's so good, but he can't act.
He cannot act to save his life.
No. Which is unfortunate. It's kind of one of these things, like, obviously he wanted to act.
Yeah.
But it was like, he was Gene Simmons of Kiss. I mean, he was really popular. Coming off of Kiss, and everyone, you know, oh, okay, sure, Mr. Simmons. He needed someone to tell him no. Bless him for trying, but
right. You almost wonder, would this movie have been absolutely terrifying if he was a silent villain the whole time?
Yeah,
if he like really? Only communicated through robots or
only, you know, text messages, yeah,
something, and you're just seeing that, and you're like, why doesn't he talk?
As it turns out, his voice box is a robot, and it's just, you know, some other
something else. Yeah,
sounds like Stephen Hawking or something.
Would have been great.
That would have been pretty awesome. You know, a thing I liked about this film, though, and a lot of this probably has to do with the writing, and Michael Crichton was very good with his, you know, hard science fiction or whatever, is that this movie, even in 1984, actually was pretty, it predicted a few things too. The kid is sitting there, or they're walking around with effectively iPads.
Mm-hmm.
The police, the kid's got like a game pad, you know, he's playing. I thought, wow, you know, where did that come from? Because
right.
1984, not even a glimmer in anyone's eye.
Right.
It was, I mean, Next Generation Star Trek doesn't come around until 88, 89, where mm-hmm. they're rocking around with their pads. prior to that, nothing. So it's right. Like, where did you come up with this?
They came up with drones. Mm-hmm. They had the little hover drones going around things. I was like, wow, that was a part I forgot, was like when they send like the hover drone into the house to check out the robot that has the gun. And I'm like, oh, cool. They have drones.
Yeah. Again, where does that come from?
Yeah.
Obviously, Michael Crichton's a time traveler. I don't know where you get that idea.
Yeah.
I thought that was very cool. Didn't they actually even have the self-driving car?
They did, yeah. They did have the self-driving car. It had like a mannequin. I guess the mm-hmm. mannequin's just there to not freak people out. I don't think the mannequin's driving.
Well, it was being used as a sort of decoy, or could be used as a decoy or something. And so they were trying to make it look like mm-hmm. someone was driving the car. So yeah, there was a mannequin in the front, but it was self-driving. I don't remember if they. It wasn't a remote control. It was like a pre-programmed destination or whatever, and it would just drive along.
Uh-huh.
So I thought that was, again, you know, maybe that was a little bit more sure you could see that. People have been talking about that since the 50s.
Right.
But the drones and the iPad, that's pretty slick.
I don't know if you caught it, but you mentioned C-3PO a moment ago when Tom Selleck's character, Jack Ramsey, goes home for the first time and he's talking to his son, mm-hmm. and he's having the conversation with Lois, the robot that like kind of raises the kid.
Right.
There's C-3PO cereal
in
the kitchen. I didn't catch it either. My wife was like, did you see that? C-3PO cereal.
Awesome.
So he's talking to Lois with C-3PO cereal out next to him. I'm like, that's pretty kind of funny. And the question I had that rewatching this, because the whole idea of like, oh, anytime a robot goes bad, it's a runaway and there's a police division for it. Do you think this movie happened because of Blade Runner, which only came out 2 years earlier?
I think there had to have been some influence there.
At least in terms of like the studio being like, oh, look at that movie. We need
something.
Yeah.
Yeah. There might be sci-fi might be a thing again. Well, you got also about this time we would have Return of the Jedi, wasn't it?
I think so.
Yeah. So yeah, sci-fi was definitely a little bit. Blade Runner comes up with the more dark and gritty, and so yeah, okay, we need a grounded science fiction. Yeah, gotta wonder about that one. I think there has to have been some influence there.
Yeah, that's what I just kept thinking as watching. I was like, when did Blade Runner come out? 2 years earlier. Okay, we're well into Star Wars. Blade Runner's doing this. I bet this movie got greenlit because of that.
Right now, I know. Box office wise, this film did not do well. Apparently, what I see reported for the budget was about $8 million, and it barely took in $7 million at the box office. But it looks like it went up against. There was no way this film was going to do anything. It went up against The Terminator, Star Trek III: The Search for Spock, and 2010, The Year We Make Contact.
Huh.
All came out about the same time as this film. A lot of big films competing for box office dollars there. You can see where something that the guy from TV that you could sit and watch for free isn't going to be a big draw.
Yeah.
That, which I think is a little unfortunate. It should have, I'm not going to say it was going to be a big hit, you know, if those films hadn't been around it, but I think it would have done better.
Probably.
And speaking of Tom Selleck, I think he is an actor that would occasionally kept trying to find his foothold into films.
Yeah.
And just never could quite hold on. He seems better suited for television. And maybe that's just because I've seen more of him in television than I have in films. But he would just kind of do these occasional. He did Runaway. He did something like Quigley Down Under.
Which I like.
I actually really enjoy like Quigley Down Under. We might have to rewatch that one.
It's Tom Selleck month.
Yeah. And then, of course, Three Men and a Baby.
Yeah.
Maybe his biggest role.
Most famous, anyway.
Most famous movie that he's done. And outside of that, it's just, you know, Magnum P.I. and then television, Friends, and now he's in Blue Bloods, I think, on CBS.
I wonder if he never got over the regret of passing up Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
He gave up Indiana Jones to do Magnum, which Magnum, great show.
Yeah.
Very popular, but it's not Indiana Jones. And that could have, I mean, that could have changed that franchise, maybe better or worse.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely would have changed his career, probably for the better. would have changed Harrison Ford's career.
Harrison who would say?
Oh, yeah, that guy from Star Wars.
That's one of those interesting, it's kind of the chicken egg questions when it comes to like, okay, Tom Selleck passed on Indiana Jones. Would that still be the Indiana Jones that we know?
Right.
That the 3, 4, or are we going to have 5 films, you know, or the young Indiana Jones Chronicles or whatever it is?
Or would it have been a one and done?
Exactly. You really wonder. And when you see Tom Selleck's other film work, you kind of lean towards probably would have been the one and done.
Yeah.
I just don't know if he really has the presence on film that he does on screen.
You need him in a longer format than an hour and a half. That maybe he can't build a character in such a short amount of time, that he can build a story and a character over a period of time, and you want to go through the journey, a longer journey with him, rather than just like, I got to come up with something interesting in just a few scenes.
Yeah.
Oh, crap.
And that's what it kind of felt like with watching him in Runaway, is I felt like, oh, this is what Magnum P.I. did before he retired from the police force, or this is what he goes on to do after he quits being a private investigator. Because this felt like you're watching Magnum.
Yeah.
Maybe he just doesn't have anything other than that.
Right. He's got one tool in his toolbox, and he'll play it.
Yeah, and you got to find the right way, the right place to put him. And Magnum P.I. was obviously the right place for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Films, maybe not so much. Anything else you wanted to talk about the film?
I almost wonder if, because it was subtle, and I'm only thinking about it now. I did write a note about it, but I wonder if this was also like kind of like Crichton's way of saying, oh, robots are going to replace us at every turn, because we see them working in so many things where it's like, oh, they're working on an entire construction site and the people who are there are just sort of there to supervise the robots and make sure they don't break. And if they do, they call the runaway squad, because when they go to try to capture Gene Simmons's character Luther for the first time, a couple of guys die, a couple of like thugs die, and the police like run the prints on the guys, and they find like, oh, both of these guys have like serious rap sheets. One of them graduated from Caltech and the other graduated from MIT. And I was like, you have those degrees and you're known street thugs? Yeah. And now I'm thinking like, oh, was that his way of sliding in that you can't get a job even with that kind of an educational background?
Because the robots can do it better.
Robots are doing everything, and you just have to take like robot maintenance as your job, and there's not a lot of those, or you've got to build the robots.
Yeah, I was surprised this film, at least overtly, didn't have any message like that. And I have to think that message would just come naturally in a story like this. So it would have to be kind of done a little bit more subtly, because you have to have that message. If you're telling a story where, you know, robots are our future, you've got to have that in there. You just can't.
And that's the only part where you could, and it's a stretch. I feel like I'm really making a stretch to make those connections, but that's the only time it comes up. Nobody says anything like, oh, they're replacing us and, you know, unemployment is through the roof, but hey, we got robots.
Yeah, I'm really surprised. Again, that's where, if this were a series, you would definitely have an episode or multiple episodes about the workers union that are trying to fight this construction site, because, yeah, they can't find work because the robots can do it cheaper and faster. And what's progress? Now I really want a series.
Runaway. We'll make it. We'll get Tom Selleck.
He's busy. We'll have to find someone else. Get the new guy that's one the CBS.
The new Magnum?
The new Magnum, yeah.
Yeah, why not?
I don't know how long that'll last. We'll see.
The other part I would like to talk about is, like I said, there are some moments of this movie that still really hold up because they're tense. They have a couple of really good tense scenes, and one is, like I had mentioned, the bullet removal scene. That was a really good scene.
Mm-hmm.
That's really just Cynthia Rhodes just sitting there having water thrown on her to look like she's sweating her face off. But that was a really good scene because it's the one bullet that's supposed to explode that doesn't. Mm-hmm. Thank you, plot.
Yeah. And good thing the plot shield was on when she took a hit. Yeah.
But yeah, no, she acted her tail off in that scene. She was just like, you know, and I really like how they sprinkle humor into this movie at just the right moments where she's, you know, he's about to go pull the bullet out. And then she's just sort of like, do you need your glasses? You really feel as though someone's digging around her arm to get like this 2-inch shell out of her arm because she looks like she's in pain.
And that's something of her acting was really well. I think there was a lot of, you know, if take or leave, you know, what we said about Tom Selleck's acting or whatever, but the writing I thought was really good throughout the film in that how it set up things like the bullet removal. She's hit. They're going to try to bring in some bullet removing robot. And Tom Selleck's like, you kidding? These things wig out all the time. Yeah. She's going to lose her arm. The discussions that they have, and it's done like in the hallway of this hotel. And there's people passing by, you know, they're talking through people, around people. It's a very busy, and it's like very realistic.
Yeah.
All the writing and how they set up the conversations and where they set them, it's all very real. Mm-hmm. That's one of the things that really struck me from this, in this movie, was just how well it was. And maybe that was just the directing or maybe a little bit of, I guess it'd have to all land on a director on that point. Someone has to say, okay, I want you to pass while they're talking. No, just walk through them.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah.
That aspect of it.
That is a good aspect, especially since it's adding to that whole idea of like everybody's crowding around and he just wants the room clear and he's yelling for the room to get clear. And the news reporter is right there, who I think is the only news reporter in this entire city. She's everywhere. There's no other camera. Maybe that's another thing. Like, oh, no, we only have one news station. Everything else is robots. They're the last human reporters. Yeah.
I like that in the police station, obviously the runaway squad is just literally like three people.
Yeah. You
know, once she signs on, it's three people. And they are literally just in the corner in this crowded cubicle to three people. That's their office all together. And it's also their workshop. You know, it's their desk. Everything's all jammed into that little corner. It's like, that just seems very real.
That's how I work. That's where I do all of my tech stuff at work.
Exactly. Like that is IT.
And did you notice he only had a handful of scenes? He was the police chief. Was G.W. Bailey
from
Police Academy.
Police Academy, thank you.
Which he kind of kept teetering back and forth between being supportive and not being supportive. I guess just whatever the scene needed,
right,
or like when tensions were building up too high, him and Jack Ramsey were kind of going at it. But the part in the hotel when it's like, we need the room clear, I was so hoping for his character to be like, all right, everybody out, move it, move it, move it. I was like, damn it, they should have done that. I would have been fine with it.
When did the Police Academy come out?
Let's look that up. Oh, same year, 1984.
Oh, my gosh. All right. I wonder what he filmed first. That would have been great.
Yeah, he could have done it. No one would have known what he was referencing.
Yeah, that's interesting. They came out the same year, so he probably had to film one and the film Police Academy and this back to back. And you wonder if that was what, you know, would his career gone a different path had he not done Police Academy and had been this film instead? Would he have gone for the more the dramatic police chief role, or forever stuck as the police chief in Police Academy?
Yeah, and the scene I really like is that final confrontation, the final showdown where Luther has taken Jack's son hostage, and so Jack is like, nope, I'm not making any mistakes, nobody follow me, I'm not even calling this in, and just it was a good setup. And that whole scene like on the elevator, because Jack's character has issues with vertigo, and so he's all the way up on like the 80th floor or whatever it is, and he keeps looking over the edge. That's the one part of his character that doesn't make sense. Like, oh, I have a problem with heights. Let me look out the window of the helicopter. What are you doing? But that part where like the four spiders show up and, you know, they're spraying the acid on his face, and you're like, what I love about the 80s is we had vulnerable action heroes who'd get hurt and would, you know, bleed and have scars, and you just see like like his skin is like bubbled out from, right. and it's turned black from the acid that's been sprayed on him. And you're like, he's gonna die. And right. he goes through all of that and barely survives. And he's hanging off the edge of this construction elevator that has no doors. And he just barely crawls back up through like this hatch and he's back inside the elevator. And there's Gene Simmons, who hasn't even actually fought him yet.
Right.
And he's just standing there, and Jack can barely lift his head. And it's like, our hero is down. Uh-huh. Our hero's about to die. And I like how he just sort of outsmarts him because he reset the elevator, and Gene Simmons doesn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
And so he tosses him off the side. And the one part I thought was confusing is, why didn't Gene Simmons program the spiders to attack anyone but him?
Yeah, yeah.
If he's got this technology that can seek people out, that means he should be able to reverse engineer it to make himself safe.
Right.
How is he going to get off the construction site at all?
Yeah. Oops. Yeah. I guess he assumed that the spiders would be busy making, you know,
killing everyone else.
Stew out of everyone else, and yeah. he could just walk away. I don't know.
It was a clever, like, twist of outsmarting the villain of, like, oh, he reset the elevator. Like, it wasn't plot for plot's sake. Like, it worked. The character had earned that moment. But, yeah.
Yeah.
It just needed, like, maybe one more thing to make it make sense.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was designed, I mean, this was supposed to be just an action film. It yeah. was just a cop and robber film that just happened to have these robots and, you know, worked into the plot. So everything did as much as it needed to do, I guess.
And that's where the film's at its best, where it's the action. Because the part in, like, the two cop cars being chased by, like, those, like, little robot on wheels, like, mm-hmm. that are little bombs. That yeah, those are all the best scenes. The mm-hmm. the bullet chase scenes are the best scenes. The part where they stop to talk, get to the next one. Come on. Yeah. This is not the fun part.
Right. Yeah, you want the tense and you want the action scenes. You know, him going through the house looking for the robot with the revolver.
That is a really tense scene.
That's a great scene. The car chase with the things, and that's an impressive little car chase with these little remote control little. Mm-hmm. Oh, those are great.
That must have been fun. Somebody's off to the side like, sweet.
Yeah. And I don't know how they did it. Obviously, they did a little trick photography or whatever. Those suckers look like they were going pretty fast.
Yeah,
you know,
probably fast forwarded the shot maybe.
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering, if they just had everyone driving like 25 and had these things speeding along, you know, and then they could speed up the film a little bit. But that looked, they did a fantastic job, and it was exciting. Yeah,
filming it must have been interesting too, because like you're seeing these shots from like ground level of these things going under cars, like their cameras, you're driving along right with a camera under the car, like don't hit a pothole.
Right, yeah. You had to have someone that went ahead of that with a brush, with it sweeping off, making sure there was nothing on the road.
Otherwise, we're losing a very expensive camera.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so the action scenes and everything are really the highlights of the film. The set direction and the set pieces, I think, are really great. I like just some of the extra care that was taken into things like the robot construction site. You know, they've got the elevator and it's got extra buttons on it. It's got up and down, up human and up robot.
Yeah,
because it can go faster if all it's on there are robots, it can go faster or up or down because they're not going to be affected or mm-hmm. or anything. So got extra speeds. That doesn't come into play. It's there. It's on the controls.
They just thought it out.
Yeah. And it's just so someone think, well, that's what would be there. You know? And I thought, that's a nice touch. I like that. That pulls me into this world.
Yeah.
It says this world exists. It's not just you're making up this world in my world. You're bringing me into your world.
Yeah.
And that's done throughout the film. And I really appreciate that. Yeah. That's really where the kind of where this film really shines.
Yeah. I feel as though Crichton must have sat down and created the world first and thought of like, okay, what would be needed here and there and there, mm-hmm. and then wrote a story into that world. Because yeah, there's a lot of detail that they don't talk about.
Right.
You notice it or
it's
you
just
don't.
There. Yeah. No, nothing's made a big deal of, like, all the technology that they use. No one makes a big deal of it. Mm-hmm. I saw somewhere else where the remote headsets, apparently they have
the little earpieces.
The earpieces. Way ahead of their time.
Yeah, that's another thing they thought of. It's not like these giant things or walkie-talkies. It just pop it in your ear and you talk like, we have that now.
Yeah, exactly. And nothing, no deal. It's just that's what we use. Everyone acts and mm-hmm. uses this technology like they've been using it their whole lives.
Right. There's no part where Thompson shows up and she's like, oh, what's that? Oh, you haven't seen this before?
Right.
Like
you just put it in your ear. We'll be able to talk to you. Yeah, none of them.
Yeah, it was that's good writing. I love being plopped into a world and you figure a world out, and this definitely does that.
Mm-hmm.
It's the other parts they needed to cut out. Figure something else out.
Yeah, no, there was a lot to love in this film. There was definitely, there was genius within the film, and unfortunately some of it just, it was work. Fighting to come through, and it couldn't.
There's a good movie in there.
Yeah.
That is maybe like an hour long.
Yeah, or a series. Like
or a series.
Saying, it should have been a series.
We'll get to work on that.
Well, let's see, I don't think I have anything else.
Oh, I know. This is the part that made my wife laugh at the end. Luther falls off the elevator. He probably falls like a floor. His robot spiders turn on him. He gets like injected with acid like 8 different times.
Oh, yeah.
So Jack has to go check the body. And I guess because it's the 80s, for like 3 more seconds, Luther comes back to life and just goes, ah! And then he died.
Just got to need that. And she have the jump scare.
Right. And it's not even scary. She jumps at everything. She's the kind of person, if I'm just walking down the hall and she happens to come out of a room at the time I'm passing the room, I don't even say, I'm just going to get a drink of water. Right. And she's like, ah! Like, that part, she just started laughing hysterically. So that's how unscary it was. And that's kind of how the movie ends.
Well, I remember that scene, you know, him walking up to the body and the music and the way they're leading up to it and how long it's taking. It's like, you'd be disappointed if it didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would have scared me more if it had just, they'd gone up, and then they're like, cut the credits. That right. would have made me jump more than him actually jumping up.
Sure.
Because you're just expecting it so much. It's telegraphed. I think would be a good way to put it. Yeah. Awesome. Well, I'm glad it still ends up being an enjoyable watch after all this time. It's a film that I may, now that I know and remember it, you know, it was one of these things that was on the video shelf at the, you know, little mom and pop video store before Blockbuster or anything. It was up there like, how about that one? You know, that one looks cool, you know. So, and that's probably how I watched it the first time. And I haven't seen it in a long time either. Yeah, it popped up on Amazon Prime. So if you have Prime, it's free.
Go watch it.
You can't beat free.
It's an experience.
Absolutely. All right, well, before we go, I did get a short letter from Floyd. This was sent actually a long time ago, but it's been a while since we've recorded. So I do apologize, Floyd. He says he loved our discussion on The Dark Crystal. I had the privilege of seeing it in a theater when it came out. I love the film for the visuals, but the story is just okay. Yeah. Like you guys, I would have liked to have seen this world fleshed out in more films. Jim Henson created such a rich fantasy world, which begs to be explored. I think I'll have to renew my Netflix subscription to check out the new series. Not only has The Dark Crystal seen new life with the upcoming series, but there's also a new board game based on the film. I saw it at Half Price Books, along with a game based on Labyrinth, and another game based on John Carpenter's The Thing. Obviously, you guys didn't talk about The Thing, but I think it's interesting that publishers are coming out with games based on these older films. As always, keep up the good work. Well, thank you very much for writing in, Floyd. We appreciate it. Yeah, board game on the Dark Crystal, that would be, if you're a gamer or whatever, that might be kind of fun and interesting, too.
I think you're seeing these things come back because a lot of these things are, you know, from like the late 70s and into the 80s, and the people who grew up with those, they're the adults now. They're the ones that are like, I want that. I want that game. I've had an idea for that game since I was 10 because I love The Dark Crystal, and we're turning into a game, damn it. Like, the kids, that's what's happening.
The kids are the creators now.
Yeah.
They're the ones with the money.
Right, and that's why we're getting all of these like 80s nostalgia things going on, because the creators, that was their childhood. Like, that's why like Stephen King's It got made, and it was set in that. Well, no, that wasn't set in the 80s, but it had an 80s feel to it. But we got like Stranger Things. That's hardcore 80s. Mm-hmm. Like, the whole thing about that is it's set in the 80s. Do you like the 80s? Let's do it. I think that's why you're seeing those things come out now.
Yeah. speaking of the Netflix series, we questioned whether or not it was going to be puppets or CGI or whatever. There was a story that's come out since. There was an article that came out since that does say it is going to be puppets.
Yeah.
So, yay.
If you didn't do it, you'd be making a terrible mistake.
Yeah, I think you would have upset a lot of people had you done anything else.
Right.
So, yeah, that's all I have. I guess that is going to do it for us. Matt, thanks again for joining us. Good luck with everything with the podcast. I know you guys are like well on your way. You got lots of episodes ready to go. And so good luck with that. I hope Jen sticks with it. You know, she doesn't get bored.
Jess.
Sorry.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of one of the stipulations. She's in it now.
Yeah.
She's got no choice.
Contractory. Can't say that word.
Because PG's her older sister. Like, so you've got that. It's like, no, you can't. I said so.
Right. Excellent. Well, good. Well, I hope you guys have fun. I'll be tuning in and listening. That's how I'm going to fill in my supernatural knowledge. I'm just going to listen to the show.
Not going
to
watch the actual episode?
No, I'm probably not going to watch the show. I'll just listen to you guys talk about it.
All right.
So it's a lot of fun. As always, yeah, any feedback or anything, timeshifterspodcast@gmail.com, @timeshifterspod, and @moviesatthemat. And of course, Facebook, just search for Time Shifters Podcast. Matt, you want to give your contact information real quick for your podcast again?
Yeah, it's season 14, Time for a Podcast. We are on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify. We just got added to SoundCloud. You can find us on Twitter @Season14Podcast. Find us on Tumblr, season14podcast.tumblr.com. We even have a Facebook page. Just search Season 14, Time for a Podcast. We're out there.
Excellent. All right, that's going to do it, everybody. We haven't talked about what we're going to do about next episode, but I'm sure we'll come up with something interesting, hopefully. Until then, we'll talk to you later. Bye, all.